Diversity.
You have caused confusion.
Oh, precious moron.
Last week, Tony Blair's new book, On Leadership, dropped, which has led to a spate of media interviews by the Dark Lord, who had been silent for about 2 months before this. As I am known as the Dark Lord Watcher-in-Chief, everyone has been asking me to make something on them. So I've watched them all, and I'm going to pass through some filleted highlights. Now, the BBC has a copyright embargo on theirs, some Indian dude interviewed Blair on there, and the William Hague interview was exclusively on foreign policy, so less relevant for our purposes. So I'm going to focus on the ones by James O'Brien for LBC and by Sophie Ridge for Sky News. Now, what struck me most watching these is just how much elite theory, as outlined in my own best-selling book, The Populist Delusion, Buy It Now, etc., is distilled and internalized by Blair. And I'm going to try to focus on this and ignore those moments where the various interviewers try to drag Emperor Blair into the current thing slop that he is now plainly above. Now, on this score, I will say that the way that he steadfastly refuses to be drawn on any of these topics in any of the interviews is masterful by the Dark Lord. Truly, he is leading the anti-slop revolution by example. Incidentally, I do not believe the book is at all ghost-written. It is plainly all his own work. I do not think he has done much reading. He is mostly, I think, speaking from lived experience. But his lessons conform to the central lessons of power from elite theory. In other words, elite theory is just simply true, and Blair has rediscovered it by chance, in the same way that you might discover gravity, or in the same way that you might discover that dogs have four legs, or that human beings have two eyes. For example, one of the things that I have mentioned on occasion, one of my least popular views, is that there is hardly any difference between different systems of power. That is, whether it's democracy or dictatorship, this regime or that regime. In the populist delusion, I talk all the way down to the level of a chess club. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a union or a football team, a company with a CEO. All power structures essentially work in the same way. Since power has its own way of working, and in the end, this comes down to an organized minority over a disorganized mass, and a leader who must exercise decisionist executive power in order to get anything done. Now, I am not going to read the thousands of Twitter replies and YouTube comments I've had over the years crying out in pain at this view. Most of it utter cope. But trust me, it is not popular, and people really struggle to come to terms with this. But here is Blair talking to the slovenly dog-faced gremlin, James O'Brien, articulating my view nearly word for word.
Themes of your new book On Leadership, isn't it? Lessons for the 21st Century. You identify sort of three ages of leadership, and the third one is the one where all leaders will hopefully end up. Who is this book aimed at? Who did you have in mind? Did you have a reader in mind when you wrote it?
I mean, certainly not the incoming Prime Minister and the new government, because it was started...
I don't know how many times you have to say that. I don't think anyone's ever going to believe you.
Andrew Moore,
in The New Statesman, adamant that the whole thing was written entirely for Keir Starmer's benefit.
It really wasn't. I mean, it was begun sort of several years back, and because I've been really busy, it's taken me time to write, and it was finished in May. But I think... No, it's written partly for leaders, but it's also who are coming into office, because, you know, I'm sort of thinking of the things I wish I'd known, or someone at least had got me to think about before I started exercising power. But actually, the book, I think leadership's the same in any organization, whether you're running a country, a company, a community center, or a football team. And actually, I was talking to a friend of mine who runs a restaurant the other evening. And I thought, I was watching how they were running it. I was thinking it was pretty much the same. So it's about the lessons of leadership that I've learned, not just from doing the job, but now my institute works in roughly 40 to 50 countries actually around the world. And, you realize that even though the circumstances and context of leading a country are obviously different depending on the country, many of the things that I learned usually by error and mistake, you can distill into something of a science. And politics and government is the one area, there are lots of books written on how to be a CEO of a company, lots of books written on football coaches, but very few on what it's like to be the leader of a country.
You draw on both experiences, don't you, on being the leader of a country, but also on running the Tony Blair Institute, perhaps drawing a little more on the second period of your life than some readers might expect.
Yes, because, I've been out of office now a long time from the UK, 17 years, and I've been working with many different governments and many different leaders. And what is fascinating to me is the degree to which, whether you're running the United States of America or a developing nation in Africa, a lot of the lessons are the same.
Even in non-democracies, which you also...
Yeah, even in non-democracies, because even then, it's your decision-making power arrives by a different route. Obviously, in a democracy, it's the will of the people, in dictatorship, whatever. But the quality of decision-making is still what makes the difference. And one of the things I draw attention to is when you analyse the world today, it really is true that the difference between the countries that succeed and fail is the quality of governance, leadership and decision-making. And you can have two countries living side by side with each other, same resources, same potential, same opportunity. One succeeds, one fails. And it's all about the quality of governance.
And to the idea that you sort of validate or even sanitize undemocratic countries simply by your association with them, and possibly even therefore sort of the corollary of that would be to slightly sully the office that you once held.
Yeah, but because we do work in countries that aren't traditional Western democracies or aren't democracies at all. But my question is always, are they moving in the right direction or the wrong direction? And so we work in some countries where some people wouldn't. But I think if they're important countries and the leadership there is trying to do the right thing, it's important they're helped.
Oh, Brian, what is that plastic thing round your wrist? It's pretty disgraceful to turn up to an interview with the grand statesman Blair looking like that, belly protruding, very disrespectful. Anyway, it's quite remarkable that Blair speaks about what is and not what things ought to be here. I am impressed by his Machiavellian realism on this score. No matter his other faults and the fact that he is, let's not make any mistake, a political enemy and not a friend in Schmittian terms. This was the only interesting bit, in my view, of the James O'Brien interview. The scruffy LBC slop merchant was hell-bent on asking slop questions and therefore wasted most of his 20 minutes with Blair. Actually, there was one amazing bit towards the end where Blair agreed with my view, in a sense, that ideology only matters when you're in power. This was in reference to the experience of being in opposition. Let us have a look.
I've resisted any temptation to ask you to sort of score Keir Starmer's report card so far, not least because plenty of other people have already asked you that question. But I think it's fair to say you were relatively sceptical about his capability of winning elections when he first came into the role, partly because the scenario post 2019 was so stark. What do you think he got right? What could you almost include in a book about leadership with regard to what Keir Starmer has already done as opposed to what you would like to see him do in the future?
Well, the thing that I thought was going to be really, really difficult, and I actually doubted anyone could do it, was to take the Labour Party by the scruff of the neck and turn it round. And he did that. And I think one lesson of leadership is you've got to show you're in charge of your own, your own party. And if you, if, because when you're in opposition particularly, you know, you're just saying things. You can't, you know, you're not doing anything. You're just saying things. The only thing you do is you run your own organization. You run your party. And therefore, it's absolutely essential that you show you can do that, because people will think, if you can do that, maybe you can run the country. By contrast, if you can't do that, I don't think I'm going to trust you with running the country. And I think, you know, the thing that he did that I really have to say, you know, he did with extraordinary skill and determination was take the Labour Party and turn it round, because it was, you know, it was heading towards extinction, frankly, post-2019.
Now, notably, Blair highlights the good bit Starmer did before getting into office, that is, destroying Jeremy Corbyn, and does not mention anything that he has done as Prime Minister since getting into office. But his line about being in opposition as, quote, just saying things, is a key bit of insight from Blair, which mirrors my own view that ideology, without being in power, is simply wishful thinking and nothing more. This is an area in which Blair has become wise indeed. Also, I'm not going to play the clip, but Blair mentions a little bit after this that he wants a strong Conservative Party, thereby vindicating my strategy, our strategy, I should say, for zero seats. Remember, a core reason for zero seats, it was that a two-party system does so much work for the likes of Blair and the regime. Does so much work for them, while its absence lays the mechanisms of power all bare. Blair, naturally, because he is, you know, him and his friends are in power, doesn't want this, but us, who want to deconstruct the system in a way and expose the system for what it is, we want this to happen. Now, Sophie Ridge on Sky did not do much better than O'Brien, but there was one pearl in there, about 8 minutes in, where Blair fries poor old Ridge's poor liberal brain with his basically top-down anti-democratic instincts. Let's take a little look.
I just want to read a sentence that really stood out to me in your book. You said, the leader sets out for the people what they need and not simply what they want. Does that sound a bit arrogant?
Yeah, which is why I say this is going to sound weird to you, but I honestly think it's really important, this. I mean, I think I quote the old Henry Ford thing about, you know, the Ford Motor Company, when he was asked, why don't you give people what they want? And he said, you know, if I ask people what they want faster horses. And, you know, the job of the political leader, I mean, of course, your job is to do your best for the people and to advance their interests and their prosperity and their well-being, of course. But your job is to lead and not just to follow.
You see,
so if all you're doing is just... If you're trying to work out through opinion polls or looking at social media, what is it they're saying? OK, let me go off and do that. That's not leadership.
I guess, you know, some people might be listening to that thinking, you know, what you're saying is, you know, oh, the people, they don't really understand what they need. I know. Oh, the great leaders, we know what you need. Don't worry, we'll just sort it out for you.
Yeah, this is something you can probably only say when you're not running for election, right? I mean, I remember having a conversation with someone in the course of the Brexit debate, and, you know, I was explaining the single market and, you know, why it was important Britain stayed in the single market. And, you know, he sort of said to me after a time, look, you're just this typical elite. You're just trying to say that you know more about it than I know.
This is it.
You know what I said to him? I said, I do know more because I've been Prime Minister for 10 years. So actually, I'm in the deep. It doesn't make me smarter than you. It doesn't make me better than you. But you've got to get the relationship right between political leaders and the public today. Otherwise, you end up in a situation where, you know, it's a good thing that we're not in an age of deference, and it's a good thing that people challenge leaders. But that means you've also got to bring people into your confidence as a leader and say to them, look, these are difficult decisions, and you can't just put a set of demands on my desk and say, go meet them all.
Now, this is just balls out, all out elitism by Blair, and it's just amazing to watch. To hear him dressing up, leading from the front and, you know, top down power as, quote, getting the relationship right between leaders and the people, is really quite an amazing way of putting it. Now, while you may disagree with Blair on this matter or that matter, about Brexit, about immigration, tech, whatever else, this is core truth that he is spitting here, and it is vital to grasp. It is the essence of what I discuss in The Populist Delusion. There is never any true bottom-up power. The leader must lead and impose his vision top-down, and the people must follow. The issue we face today is only that this particular elite, the one that Blair represents, seems to be at war with us. The problem is not the fundamental structure of power or government, and this is something frequently misunderstood by populists and frequently something people get wrong when they react to the sort of thing Blair is saying here. If we were to have a wise leadership who would cultivate a moral unity with the people, between the people and the elites, a vertical moral unity, rather than, for example, patronising foreign client groups hostile to the people, all this would be a lot easier to take from Blair. But what he's saying about power is at its most fundamental a fact. Now, Ridge presses in further here and brings up the riots. Now, Blair's answer may infuriate some people, but let's have a little listen anyway.
Is there a risk, though? Look, I just want to talk a bit about the riots, and I think it's very important with, you know, at the outset, I'm not in any way suggesting that the violence and the rioting that we saw in the street is in any way reflective of what the majority of people think, right? But it was traumatic. It was a traumatic, shocking, quite frightening moment for the UK. Is there a risk that, I guess, the far right are giving a narrative to people who don't like the establishment? They don't feel that they're being listened to. They feel that they're being patronised.
Yeah, absolutely. But and you're completely right in what you say. Because
you've got to take responsibility for that, haven't you?
Of course, you know, you do. But here's
a politician.
Here's the thing that you've got to do: taking responsibilities, not the same thing as saying, "Okay, this is what you think, so I'm just going to go and try and do it." You've got to engage people in a dialogue, and you've got to. I mean, in respect to the rioting, look, it's clear you have to deal with it, and I think the government and Keir dealt with it extremely well, but. You know, yes, you've always got to be looking at the underlying grievances, but here's the difference between leadership and followership. You know, it's not just a question of listening to the grievance and then just doing whatever, you know, is the latest wave of opinion on it. It's actually looking at the grievance and thinking, how do we deal with some of the fundamental questions? This is why I always say about immigration, you've got to have a policy that deals with it, that deals with the anxiety of people, that the system is without control.
A lot of people would say, you know, you're to blame for some of the distrust around things like immigration.
Yes, you know, immigration, people sometimes say to me now, well, you had an open-door immigration policy. We absolutely didn't.
There was a significant rise in immigration. That is fair, isn't it?
There was a rise in immigration because, of course, our economy needed people to come in. And a lot of that immigration came from people from Europe coming to our country. And at that point, we did a freedom of movement within the European Union. But immigration was still less than half of what it is today. And on asylum, which was the real issue, as I came in, there was escalating asylum claims. We reduced those very substantially and were dealing with the claims at about five times the speed of today. So, you know, the idea that we... And towards the end, by the way, I put forward what is the only solution. If you want to deal with immigration properly, you've got to know who's got a right to be here and who hasn't. Because at any one time, the biggest problem on immigration is you have a large number of people, could be anything from 750,000 people, who are here without permission. And that's why in the old days it was about identity cards, but today a digital identifier is important for all sorts of reasons, but including that one.
Now, first thing, I have to disagree with Blair that Starmer dealt with the riots well. He absolutely did not. He inflamed tensions in a way that Blair would never have done himself. I understand that tone has a rule not to criticise any Prime Minister or US President who came after him. But his assessment of this, his assessment of Starmer, is way off here. However, with that said, what Blair said after this was more interesting, which is that basically he's using many lines on immigration that I have mentioned in the past including his own record on asylum and the hostile environment, many other things I've mentioned when I've kind of defended Blair in the past. It's interesting that he is using that exact frame. Again, I do not think he's watched even 1 second of my content. It is just that he is thinking in a very similar way from the way that I am, in the way that I am thinking, if that makes any sense. Now, of course, he had to get it in there. He always has to get it in there somewhere. His bit on ID cards and digital ID, which he's not going to let go until those things are implemented. Many people watching this will rightly be sceptical of whether any British government would implement digital ID in such a way that would deliberately disadvantage illegal immigrants. Nonetheless, there are future scenarios where that could indeed happen. What Blair says next is even more interesting, though. Let's take a little listen.
I just want to kind of zoom out, because I've been looking at the UK, and I think it is important to look at, you know, the global picture that we see as well. Because it does feel like that we're seeing an awful lot of, I guess I would describe them as kind of like strongman, kind of macho leaders, like a kind of rise of populism. Is that something that you are worried about, relaxed about? What would you think?
No, I am worried about it, but you've got to understand why it's happening. And it happens when you don't have a strong centre that's delivering. And people often think of, you know, because I get criticised for being a centrist, which I'm perfectly happy to own up to, but it's the centre is not the mushy middle between left and right. It should be the place of solutions. Mm. I mean, the truth of the matter is today, and this will, as this technology revolution progresses, by the way, it's become more and more so, you're going to have politics is going to be much more fragmented. You're not going to have the same loyalty vote that you used to have. People will make up their minds as they did in the last election. You know, you've got a splintering of political parties. And the other thing that's going to happen is that people are, if there are grievances, they are going to expect you to deal with them. And the centre has got to be the place that you deal with them. If you're simply sitting there trying to manage the situation or say, well, this group's extreme, that group's extreme, that's not going to work. So I've got a, you know, very, very clear sense of this, that in the end, if you want to defeat this sort of strongman populism, you defeat it by the solutions.
Now, this right here was the first sign of a covert criticism of the Starmer government and implicitly also the Democrats in America and the governments in France and Germany too. Blair explicitly says that it is not good enough simply to call people who have grievances quote-unquote extreme. The centre, he says, must actually solve the problem. And he is absolutely right on this, so why aren't they bloody doing it? There's a universe in which almost everybody watching this video, including me, would be called a centrist. A sensible centrist, even. Rather than being smeared as far-right, extremist, or whatever other nonsense word they want to sling at you, because you've had enough of kids being stabbed in the street by people who shouldn't even be here. And let's face it, that's what it boils down to. What is Starmer doing, Tony? He's letting people out of jail, jailing people who say naughty words about murderers, and then sitting down with fucking Idris Elba, an actor, the actor Idris Elba, for fuck's sake, to discuss knife crime. That's a joke. That is not leadership. It is a total joke. It's not even cotton. It's nylon. So where is the silk that we were promised, Tone? This crap from Starmer is not a solution. It's making things worse. So if you have any sway at all, put your foot down. All right, that's enough. I got a bit ranty towards the end there, but yeah, a very interesting exercise to look always at what the Dark Lord is saying. And if you haven't picked up his book, I would recommend it, because there's a lot of nuggets in there. There's some bad bits as well, but overall, definitely worth a read. All right, till next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.